Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of South Geek News. This is episode 8, and we are recording a week before Christmas, December 18th, 2024. And, of course, my voice decides to go right there. Hang on a second. We'll fix it in post. Anyway, so you've got Ben Rayberg
here.
He's actually remote. Do you want to tell us why you're remote? If you don't, that's fine.
I got COVID.
Look at that. First time ever, right?
First that I know of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've joked about that too. Whenever I said I've never gotten COVID, and my daughter goes, "That you know of," I said, yeah. "Well, I have literally felt like shit for the last 5 years, so maybe that's it. I don't know."
Long COVID, yeah,
yeah. I've got long COVID. Anyway, but hey, we have a special guest host with us. He's actually done some stuff for us before, so welcome, Samuel Lewis, my good friend Sam from he's my brother from another mother kind of thing. From up yonder in Kentucky. This is what always kills me. He's another Southern boy in Kentucky. Someone please explain to me how Kentucky is Southern when it's in the northern part of the United States. Can you please?
I'm in southeastern Kentucky. Does that count enough for you?
It's southeastern Kentucky.
Yeah, southeastern. Okay. Oh.
I have a sister-in-law who has just moved from Science Hill. Do you know where Science Hill, Kentucky is? I think that's in southern, eastern part of Kentucky.
Close enough, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, I've never been to Kentucky. I've threatened to.
It's pretty place.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
we have a bet going inside of your digital calendar that you're going to have to if you reach the age of 70, which I think you will. So
that's right. We do. I was, the other day I was trying to remember I said, there's something on the calendar between me and Sam. What in the hell is that? And you just reminded me. So,
yep.
There you go. There you go. I know Tyler's been up there. He's driven up there twice. He's flown in once, and he said, your roads are complete and utter crap. So
depending on where you go, yeah. Not wrong.
But then again, I mean, hey, who can we say, what can we say about Georgia roads, right? Mm-hmm. So, all right. So the way we normally start this out is, since it's usually just been Ben and myself, we'll check in with each other, see what's happened in the last 2 weeks. But since you're the guest here, Sam, anything that's been going on with you, you know, in your life, in podcasting, whatever it is that you want to share, now's the time.
For those of you that don't know, with me being new to an audience, perhaps, I am currently a master's student in mental health counseling, and we're on break. Yay. So it's allowing me to like do little projects and stuff like that that I might not have had time, because if you're doing that and you're doing a job, you have two jobs. I'm just going to point that out. You do. You spend all that time. But for a while, because I'm a streamer and everything, my poor computer was chugging along on its last breaths. Like it was, especially given I used it as a gaming computer, I would be playing a game and in the middle of it, it would just crash, and the computer wouldn't crash. It would give me graphical things and stuff like that. I think the graphics card was given out in it or something. I don't know exactly what it was, because that's not my department. So since I had money saved back specifically for school expenses, and 90% of my classes are remote because that's how things are in college now, I took it as a school expense and got myself, not a sponsor, a new doghouse system. And Donovan was nice enough, as he usually is when I have hardware questions, to help me put the thing together and everything like that. They build it for you and then they ship it off to you. They had a special because it was the holidays to get it to you quick. So this is the second production work, because I did a Samuel's Thoughts from the new computer. So it was, they put a lot of stuff in it. They even gave me a flipping mouse pad. Like they put a bunch of stuff in here that they didn't. And I know that Donovan at least knows who Scott Johnson is.
Yep.
One of the things they put in the box, and I can imagine the experience for someone that doesn't know who Scott Johnson is. They put a Ziploc bag that had both a copy of Rock Runners and Murder Dungeon or Dungeon Murder inside of it. So Scott's two card games that he's made so far, just for free. No freaking reason why they had them in there, but you just got two board games. So yeah, there's some interesting things. And his World of Warcraft characters, his World of Warcraft hunter mm-hmm. and the pet are in the instruction manual as animated characters for the setup manual. So there's a lot of Scott Johnson that's just like an Easter egg tied into this thing that I giggled about while I was setting it up. But yeah, I can tell the difference. I'm happy. And that's essentially my biggest tech thing right now. Plus, I no longer, because I can on camera, so only you guys can see it, but I used to have to use an adapter for my USB-C mixer because yes. my Rodecaster 2 is only USB-C.
Now you've got USB-C on the computer.
Yeah, there's one port in the back that is specifically USB-C. There's one on the top too, but yeah, so I don't have to do that anymore. And I hope one problem I was having is fixed because I think it was the adapter that was making that happen.
Yeah, I hate whenever I have to use adapters like that. And I was concerned about that too whenever, because I know you got the Rodecaster 2 a while before I did, probably a year or so. Because I've only had mine 3 or 4 months now, I think, maybe 5 months. It was back during the summer anyway. And that was one of the things I was concerned about is, you know, I knew it was USB-C and all of that. And I bought all these kind of cables and adapters and stuff. And I wound up buying this little PC. I've started buying these little B-Link PCs. They're little powerhouses. And Ben knows what I'm talking about. He's looked at them or used them too. Mm-hmm. And this one was actually a low-end unit that I think only cost me, it was under $200 anyway. And it's got USB-C and everything on it, and it works great for a production machine. So it's the one that sits over there with our podcasting table that we're normally at. But yeah, I was going to ask you, because I never got a chance to ask you how well it ran. Because I knew that you got an RTX 4060 in it. That was the graphics card, and that's actually considered, I think, a budget card now, because if you buy it brand new, it's still under $300. But as far as I could tell, that was a sweet spot. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm not in the zone of being able to drop 7, 8. I think Tyler said back whenever there was the big rush, he's mentioned he dropped like $1,300 or $1,400 for his graphics card.
But, yeah.
Well, that's Tyler.
So, yeah, that's Tyler.
And you know what's neat, not to get off track, but have y'all seen Intel's ARC cards, the new, I think it's the B850? Mm. Yeah, they finally have a contender. If you go onto YouTube and you look up, do a search, Linus Tech Tips, Linus did a review, and he is very, very happy. This is like their second generation card. Their first one was not all that great. And he said for a budget card, because this thing lists for, I think they're already out of stock, but it lists for $259 for one model and $299 for the other model. And so it finally looks like with everything else that Intel's having trouble with when it comes to their CPUs and all of that, because honestly, Ryzen is still eating their lunch. It's nice to see that they can finally get an advantage somewhere. And I like the choice. You know, I'm an AMD graphics card guy. So we've always, you know, for the longest time, we've only had two choices. We've had AMD and we've had NVIDIA, and that was it. So to have a third choice that's in that budget zone, because to me, the sweet spot is about $300. Anything over that, and my wallet starts screaming at me, and I'm like, yeah, no, we're not doing that. But, so everything works really well though, right?
Yeah. There's some more intense games I haven't gotten the chance to test yet. I'm going to try Marvel Rivals at some point, their new Overwatch clone. Let's call it what it is. It's an Overwatch clone. That's not necessarily a bad thing. This happens in video games all the dang time, but you can literally look at some of these characters and go, oh, would you look at that? Squirrel Girl is Junkrat. Like, yeah. There's no, it's literally Junkrat. Like, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like, shoots the little acorns, they bounce off of the wall, everything. Like, it's literally the same mechanics.
Yep. So I'm waiting for the lawsuits.
I'm trying to figure out which one is the D.Va equivalent. And I think maybe Hulk is that, because essentially his whole thing is he's the Hulk and that would be the mech. And then he becomes Bruce Banner for a little bit and shoots.
Yeah.
But the problem is when he's the mech, instead of shooting, he's a melee character. And I'm no good at those. So I may have to just figure something else out.
Wow, that's awesome. I'm glad you got the upgrade. Upgrades are always fun, even if, you know, you don't necessarily like to part with the money, but they're always fun. I've got some stuff on my list, some new switching gear that I want to do and increase the speeds between my office and my house. But, you know, that's going to be a little while later. Wake up, Ben, because he started snoring when we start talking about, you know, video games and stuff like that, because, you know, Ben is a stick in the mud. He doesn't play video games, but
I can't relate. Sorry.
There you go. He's like, Hulk, who's that? So other than Mr. COVID, what's been going on with you in the last 2 weeks since we convened?
It's travel. I've been down to Florida and North Carolina for Thanksgiving. And last weekend we were in North Carolina for soccer and apparently had COVID the whole time. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, that was 1,200 miles over the weekend. And it was a lot of fun.
Anybody else in your family, your household got it or exhibiting any of the symptoms?
And my son and my wife, they went through it, but they were never tested. They just kind of dealt with it. But I got to where I couldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Felt terrible. So I was like, I just need something to relieve the pressure here. And first thing they did was test me for COVID. And then that was it.
I still have some of those old, some of those old free tests that you could get through the post office. And I went to do a test about a month or so ago, and the testing solution had dried up. So I was like, well, I reckon these are past their expiration date. So, Well, we do appreciate you at least being able to stick it out and do this remotely. And I appreciate you not coming over here, because I don't really want it. And Tyler would appreciate it, because he's flying in and then driving down from Atlanta Friday. So, he's going to be here over the Christmas holidays.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you. That does. I'm going to go ahead and ask this question instead of asking it at the end. Our next show technically will be on New Year's Day. Are we going to do a show on New Year's Day, or do you want to do it the day after, or do you just, what do you want to do?
I wouldn't say no. I just don't know where I'll be.
Right. I figured New Year's Eve, that Tuesday, would be a no-go, because most people are, you know, partying, yeah, waiting for everything to come in and et cetera, et cetera.
I'll be getting ready for bed.
Yeah, me too. I don't stay up and I think I told Sam in a text the other night, man, I'm in bed between 9:30 and 10 o'clock every night.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm going to be pushing it.
We may be on the road.
Yeah. I'm going to be pushing it when Tyler drives in, because I don't think he's going to make it till somewhere between 9 or 10 o'clock driving in from Atlanta, because I don't think he flies in until like 5 or 6, and then he's got to drive down, so that's roughly 3 hours or so.
Does he not have the extra $100 to just fly to Valdosta?
It was a timing thing. It wasn't money.
Hmm.
Yeah, he.
There's only two of those flights, I think.
Yeah, they've changed them up. They changed the time of when they fly in. And so I don't remember exactly, but there was a reason why, because of when he would be getting into Valdosta, he said, the hell with that. I'm just going to drive down. He's done it before. Mm. And, but yeah, normally he would fly into Valdosta. So when he flies back out on the 7th, yeah, he's flying out of Valdosta. So, I've got a funny, which I put in the show notes, but this is really the only thing that I can, because everything else has just been status quo. So my funny of the week, I get a call. First, I get a text because most of my clients text me, as we've talked about, and said, I'm trying to hook a second monitor up to a computer, but I can't get it to do anything. Can you remote in? And I'm thinking, okay, if you can't get a monitor to come up, me remoting in is not going to do anything for you. So I call this person and I said, okay, so you're trying to hook up a second monitor to this workstation. It's a workstation that's been kind of dormant, but they're going to start using it again. And I had already gone into it, made sure everything was updated because it'd been off for a long time. And they were like, yeah. I said, so I remoted in and I'm not seeing anything. I go to the display settings and I'm only seeing one display. And I'm like, how do you have this hooked up? HDMI. So I remoted in. I looked. I'm not seeing a second monitor. So I start trying to do some troubleshooting and I'm like, well, maybe we need a different monitor. So they go get a different monitor. They hook it up. Still no go. And I'm like, okay, so what's going on here? I said, send me a picture of the back of the computer. I need to see, because I remembered what type it was. It was a Lenovo that we put in around 2017 or something like that. It's got a sixth generation i5. And these are business class machines. So, of course, you know, they're going to have VGA on them. I mean, even in today's world, in 2024, business class machines still have VGAs on them, just like servers do. There's a reason for that. And so they sent me the picture and I see the VGAs connected up to it. And I'm like, but this thing doesn't have HDMI. It's got one VGA and it's got two display ports. There's nothing connected into the display port. And I'm like, my wheels start turning. And I'm like, do you, they made a comment and they said, when I asked about HDMI, they said this phrase. Yeah, monitor to monitor. I said, wait a minute. Did you hook the second monitor's HDMI to the first monitor's HDMI? And they were like, yeah. I just started. Now I can do this because this person is my friend. I just started laughing, like heartily laughing, belly laughing. I was like, oh my God, you have just made my day. You daisy chained the second monitor to the first monitor. They were like, yeah. I said, it doesn't work that way. I said, you have to, those are inputs. Those are not outputs.
It's square peg, square hole.
He literally right? was. I said, no, 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 no. Since we don't have HDMI on this, we have DisplayPort, you're going to have to go get a DisplayPort HDMI adapter. And they were like, yeah, we have that. I said, okay, well, then we'll be good. So they do that. Well, then they call me back, or I call them. I think they call me back and it's like, okay, it's got the screen's up, but it's just got a logo on it. So I remote back in. Windows sees the second monitor, but I can't drag anything over to it, you know. I said, okay, is it to the right or to the left? And they were like, it's to the right. So I drag over to the right and I hit the corner and I'm like, I'm not getting over to that monitor. What's going on here? And I said, what are you seeing on the screen? Is it saying no signal? It's like, no, it's got this bird logo on it. I said, send me a picture. Well, it's a ViewSonic.
ViewSonic, yeah.
And I said, well, unplug it, hold the power button for a couple of seconds. Let's plug it back, turn it back on. They turned it back on. The monitor comes up. The logo comes up. The logo never goes away. I said, I think you got a busted monitor. I said, so if you've got another one you can try. They're like, okay, we'll go get another one. So a few minutes later, I get a text. We're good. It works. So we went from daisy chaining monitors, which you can't do except under, I was talking to Tyler about this. He said certain display port monitors will do that. If everything is copacetic, like you come off the display, if the display port, it's got to be, I guess, a certain version. Display port on the graphics card can go into the monitor. And if the monitor supports it, then you can daisy chain off of a second display port on the monitor to another one. That's very uncommon, at least in my world. I don't know about yours, Ben, but yeah.
I've never seen it.
So we went from trying to daisy chain, and I get the mentality. I'm not knocking this person. I get the mentality. If this is not what you do, then it's like, well, like you pointed out, that's a square. That's a square. They connect, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So we went from that, got that situated, to then find out we're working with a busted monitor. But when I laughed and they were like, well, I'm very happy I could make your day. I'm like, you have just made my day. This is the first time I've ever run into anybody trying to daisy chain monitors.
I've got this all in one, and I didn't realize that some of those had HDMI output for a second monitor. So
yeah,
to this, it would look like you were connecting a monitor to the monitor, but
right. But because it's an all-in-one, it makes sense because you, yeah, yeah. I think you used to could do that on some of the iMacs. I don't think they let you do it. Since they went to the M series, I don't think they let you do that anymore. But yeah, I was like, it was one of those where I just, you know, basically hit my forehead and I was like, ah. But I love them. I love them anyway. So, all right. So as we normally do, I've got a list of technical stories and articles that nobody probably gives a shit about, but we're going to talk about them anyway. So first up, Gmail takeover hack attack. Google warns you have just 7 days to act. And as anybody that's listened to this show knows, I make gratuitous use of ChatGPT to summarize these articles, but we always provide you with the actual link to the articles, as anybody should. So according to this, Google is warning Gmail users to act swiftly if their accounts are compromised in a hacker takeover attack. The company emphasized the importance of using recovery options like a recovery phone number and email to regain account control within 7 days if an attacker changes credentials. Without these recovery details, users risk losing access permanently. And I'm thinking what they mean is that 7 days is something that Google implements, that when you lose access to that account, you have up to 7 days to try to get it back through these recovery methods. So they go through, they say key threats and protections, hacker tactics. Hackers often change account passwords, phone numbers, and security settings after gaining access. They may also add security keys to block users from recovering accounts. Number two hacking methods, link hovering scams, fake URLs disguised as genuine links to steal credentials, and 2FA bypass via session cookies. It's where hackers use session cookies to bypass 2FA, which is two-factor authentication, mimicking an authenticated user. Number three, preventative measures, phishing-resistant authentication, use passkeys or hardware security keys, which offer stronger protection than SMS or app-based 2FA. You know, side note on that, one thing, I was talking to a friend slash client of mine one day, and I think somebody tried to get into one of his banking accounts. And of course, he got that all straightened out. And I said, one of the things that irks me, and my bank does this, they're two-factor. They do not offer token-based authenticator setups. It's either SMS or email. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? You know, SMS and email are the two weakest forms of 2FA. Mm. So, account recovery options, ensure recovery phone numbers and emails are current and unique. Number four, the recovery window. If recovery details are altered, users have a 7-day window to use the original recovery phone or email to regain access. And then they give you some recommendations. Regularly update recovery information, avoid clicking suspicious links or using unsecured devices, use passkeys for enhanced account security, refer to Google's Gmail account recovery guide for detailed steps if you're locked out. And this guidance underscores the critical need for proactive security measures to protect Gmail accounts from increasingly sophisticated cyber attacks. So I pose the question to you, gentlemen, and I use that term loosely. Do y'all have recovery emails and telephone numbers and all of that connected to your, I'll say, primary Gmail accounts? So what about you, Ben? Yeah. I'll let you go first.
Yeah, I do. At least a couple of times a year, it asks me to verify, oh, is this still correct? And yeah, and it's not another Gmail account, and it's not a Google Voice number. So,
yeah. What about you, Sam? I know you use Gmail, so you've got all your stuff set up with Recovery, right?
Yeah, I do. In fact, I've kind of got them swapped because I have an email address that I've had since high school that wasn't a Gmail one. And then I have my Gmail one, and I essentially kind of made them the Recovery
for each other,
so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah.
So to speak. So if one of them gets in trouble, I've got access to the other one. If someone gets sophisticated enough to get the other one, they're not going to get anything anyway. But
my problem, and you guys probably do not have this problem. My problem is I have no less than somewhere between 10 and 15 Gmail accounts. And matter of fact, I was logged in. I stay logged in to about four of them. And one of them I was logged in today actually had the banner at the top and said, "Hey, you don't have a Recovery phone number. You need to do this. Or do you want to dismiss this?" And I was busy, so I said dismiss. So I probably should go back and change that one. If I plan, I probably will keep it. It was one that was, you know, tied to another little venture that I was doing earlier this year. That's the thing, you know, it's like that with me and domains. I think Ben and I have talked about this too. You know, I'll get this wild idea and I'm like, ooh, I need a domain for that. And I also need an email. So I'll go buy the domain and create a new Gmail account. I mean, I got an email today from Microsoft. I actually got a phone call from Microsoft. And of course, you know, not being that guy, but I couldn't understand them. But, and it was about, I let it go to voicemail, and it was about wanting to, it was Office 365, wanting to make sure I was taking advantage of all of the things that were offered, et cetera, which is funny because it was actually the Office 365 for a client who is no longer going to be using the service come January. So it's set to expire. But yet they called it a new account. No, the account's been in use for about 2 years now. And they sent me an email. They sent one of the CC emails. I looked at it and went, "Oh yeah, I guess I did create that for that, didn't I?" I was like, "Huh, I probably should go see if I can log into that." Because it's one of those where I don't want to tie it to any of my company emails. So I'll go create a Gmail account with like my company name or the first part of the company name, and then maybe their name in a Gmail account. And then I'll just set forwarding up to my actual company email, and then out of sight, out of mind. That's probably not best practice, but I can't think of any other way to do it because I'm not going to constantly create new Office 365 email accounts that cost me $6 per email account. Or I could create aliases, but then I'd have a shit ton of aliases going to my main account. So it's no. I don't want to do that. How do you manage stuff like that, Ben? Or do you run into that?
When I create addresses, I'll spin up an idea, get a domain, put it on hosting, set up an email address, and just forward that one to my main 365 address, so that it everything passes through the spam filters. There's not another box to check. There's only a few cases where I still have another box to check where it has to receive email for a verification code for some other purpose. Mm-hmm. But, or if I have to send an email from that account, like I've got a separate box for our SonicWall account for some reason. I don't know. I don't remember why, but I pay $6 a month for SonicWall at tiftontech.com. And I think that was just to keep from using my address.
Right.
For when the team would log in, they just use the one.
Yeah, I think.
I just create an address and have it forwarded.
Did you keep a list of them somewhere?
No.
Me either. I mean,
they're at DreamHost. I can always find. And I can look in the headers and see what, you know, who did they send that to?
Yeah, I have to do that sometimes too, because I try to keep it in my spreadsheet stuff. And I know you've looked at that and you just shook your head, but you know what? Bite me. But I try to put it in there, but sometimes I get busy and I'll forget. And then like today I see it in the CC and I'm like, oh yeah, there's that. So, all right. Are we ready to move on to the next topic? Of course we are.
Sure.
So AT&T, this one I just got a big chuckle out of. AT&T to kill off landline phone service for most people by 2029. And my first question was, who still has landline service? But AT&T announced plans to phase out its copper-based landline phone services for most customers by the end of 2029, shifting focus to modern broadband and wireless technologies. The decision is driven by the declining use of traditional landlines. Who would have thunk that? Which are now used by only a small percentage of residential customers and the limitations of outdated copper infrastructure, which is vulnerable to damage and less reliable. Company is expanding its fiber network and working with regulators to address legal and contractual obligations tied to maintaining landline services. While AT&T sees this as a necessary modernization, some states and consumer advocates are concerned about the impact on low-income and rural communities that may rely on landlines due to limited broadband access. AT&T plans to support customers through the transition and ensure that they have alternatives in place before discontinuing the service. Sam, when is the last time you had a physical copper landline? How many years ago, sir?
Probably around the time that we got broadband, which is not as long back as you would expect. Donovan knows this, but for the longest time I had satellite internet where I lived because it was literally the best internet I could get. I live in like a forested area and stuff like that. And then thankfully, because now there's a new road that goes past my road to where I'm not even tied into the road system anymore, I probably would have been one of those isolated people that I'd have to go to the cable company and go, come on, yeah, just a couple more, just a little bit more, I swear I'll pay. You know, one of those people, because I have friends that are stuck in that situation.
Yeah, and that sucks.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's like, But yeah, so essentially, because the next county over was getting cable, that's the only reason I have it. Mm-hmm. They were like, well, we're going through you anyway. You want it? Like, yes, we want it. So that's the only reason why I have it.
Yeah.
So yeah, there are these places that are in like lower income rural areas that anytime one of these things go, instead of me going, that's a bit outdated technology, isn't it? The first thing that always pops into my head is, but what about those areas? And it's because I live in an area where those places still exist. So I have to think about stuff like that.
That's a fair point. Yeah. And to be very, very clear, when Sam says he had satellite internet, we're not talking Starlink. We're talking HughesNet. And if anybody's ever used HughesNet, he and I, it was such a challenge, but we got it down to where when we were recording podcasts together, we learned to time between, you know, because there's a lag of when to talk so that we would endeavor not to talk over one another as much as possible. And let me say, the day that he got cable broadband, I think I was happier than he was.
Yeah.
Did you have to readjust?
Yeah, a little bit. But, you know, it didn't take long, but it was like, oh, now we can do so much more, you know?
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, look, all these things that I've wanted to do that everyone else on the planet can do, and I couldn't. How about that?
Exactly. You know, I mean, we couldn't realistically do good video, I think, even back then. So,
mm-hmm.
And we're really talking, what are we talking, 2016, 2017, 2015, something like that?
Yep. I'm trying to think.
Or was it closer to like 17 or 18?
Might have been 17 or 18. I can't remember if I was, I wasn't still in school at that point. I had already gotten out. So that makes it even Also, why am I thinking that that's anywhere near that? Sorry, my brain has just done a thing.
I was like, wait a minute.
anytime someone mentions 2017, my brain thinks 2007. I'll tell you exactly what just happened. My brain's stupid. But yeah,
I think
it might have been around 17, 18
Yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds about right. Ben, when's the last time you actually had a copper landline? Or have you ever?
Oh, yeah, we had, you know, back in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, okay.
Now, we had a house phone for, I don't know, 5 or 6 minutes when we were in Adel. So that was 2006. And then we just, because we had a DSL circuit.
Yeah.
I had to have a phone. I don't think we ever connected a telephone. We had a phone number.
Right.
But the last time we actually connected a telephone and used the landline was that first time we were in Tifton back in 2005.
I think mine's around about that time too. We moved to Tifton in February of 2006. And prior to that, when we were in Fitzgerald, we finally got DSL broadband around 2003. No, between 2003 and 2004. And prior to that, I go way back to when it was not actually called HughesNet. I had DirectPC, which was you got the downstream, but you still had to have a telephone line to call in so that all of your requests would go out. And then I graduated over to the actual two-way dish, which when it became HughesNet. And then eventually we got DSL. So when we moved over here in 2006, that was the last time that we actually used a copper landline. And I can still tell you what our telephone number was, 229-423-7713. So whoever that has that number now, please do not call them. Do not dox them. Anyway, so yeah, when we got over here, landlines, because our area was Mediacom before I built it in 2008 for the cable company that I was running, I had VoIP. I do not consider VoIP landline. This is not what they're talking about either. They're literally talking about doing away with the physical copper so they can use like VoIP technologies, which is the better way of doing it anyway. So for me, yeah, it was essentially latter part of 2005, beginning of 2006 when we moved over here. I had all that stuff disconnected. So I haven't had a physical copper line since 2005. So
my in-laws still have a house phone. They've had the same number for over 50 years.
Wow.
So they're... Those kind of houses won't be around a while. They won't be around too much longer.
Yeah. I think when my mom passed in 2019, she still had a copper telephone line, because when dad was alive, he had DSL. And I mean, and yeah, she also had DSL because we were doing streaming, DirecTV streaming for her. But I think she was still copper because there was I could be wrong about this. I think even with DSL modems, they started actually converting it over to VoIP. So it would you'd have the phone connection in the back of the modem, but it would be VoIP instead of just being, you know, regular dial tone like it used to be. But hey, all of that's going the way of the dodo. I mean, the only reason why I even have physical telephones in my house is for my business. I run a 3CX phone server. And Proxmox, I have a SIP trunk tied to it, and I have a Yealink T33G phone sitting over on my desk over there. Otherwise, every member of my family has a cell phone. My friend and client that I was redoing all his stuff to get him upgraded back in the beginning of November that I mentioned, because he got 2 gig fiber. He was like, 1 gig. I don't want 1 gig. I want 2 gig. I'm like, yeah, you asshole. So, because at the time I had not gotten my 1 gig upgrade. And I said, so you don't, what about phone service? He goes, dude, I've been using cell phones for like, what, 10 years now? He said, we haven't had a landline in forever. And, you know, he used to work for the city, so he actually got his VoIP service through us, the CityNet/Plantel at the time. So, yeah, I mean, as long as you've got good service or you've got dependable internet and your phone does Wi-Fi calling, for anybody out there that does not know what Wi-Fi calling is, if you've got a modern cell phone, whether it's Android or whether it's iPhone, go in and enable Wi-Fi calling. For Verizon, I think all of them support it now. Because if you're in a terrible signal area like I am here, I barely get a bar of 4G service. I would not be able to make and receive phone calls if I did not have Wi-Fi calling enabled on my phone. So,
same.
Yeah. So, all right. We can salute the landlines and move on. LG's new stretchable display can grow by 50%. Bendy panels can be deformed into new form factors. LG Display has unveiled a groundbreaking stretchable display prototype capable of expanding its size by up to 50%, making it the most stretchable display in the industry. The 12-inch screen, which can stretch to 18 inches, features a 100 pixel per inch resolution in full RGB color. It is highly durable, allowing over 10,000 stretches without affecting image quality thanks to a silicon-based substrate, micro-LED light sources, and an innovative wiring design. The display's flexibility enables it to twist, fold, and integrate into various applications, such as wearable technologies, automotive panels, and even firefighter uniforms to display real-time data. Developed under South Korea's Stretchable Display National Project. That's a hell of a project. A national project called Stretchable Display. Okay. Of course it'd be South Korea. The good initiative involves... Do what?
Good use of tax funds.
Oh, yeah. The initiative involves LG Display and over 19 domestic partners, highlighting the role of government support in advancing cutting-edge technologies. This project positions South Korea as a leader in next-generation display technologies with potential economic and industrial benefits. That is, as long as the president is not trying to encourage martial law.
Couldn't help yourself, could you, Atkinson?
I couldn't. I had to go there. Did y'all look at this? That tech is really cool. It reminds me of some of the stuff I've seen in some sci-fi movies and what have you.
Is that translucent when it's off?
I think so.
I think you could slap that on the back glass and send messages to the driver behind you.
Just what kind of messages?
Fantastic driving.
Yeah, for those who can't see this because this is not video, Ben just gave everybody the one finger salute. Now, what it reminds me of, you know, they redid Total Recall many, many years ago. Much to the chagrin of us purists. I mean, there's only one version of Total Recall, and that's Arnold's version.
That's the one I watched.
So they redid it, and one of the things they had is they actually had flexible displays that they would slap. They could slap on, like, I remember there was a scene where one of the characters slapped it on the window of a car and then could, like, make phone calls and video calls and stuff like that. So, I mean, that was great. The rest of the movie sucked. So I encourage you not to go watch it. But if you want to see it, just go watch those technologies. It was pretty cool. And it literally would take it, and as long as there was, it seemed like as long as there was a translucent surface for some reason, they could slap it on that, and then it would become whatever they needed to be, a computer display, video display, et cetera, et cetera. But I like this because just think about the repercussions of what this can mean for tablets. Tablets can get thinner. They can get bendy. Phones, where you never have the bendy phone gate again that they had with the iPhones. I mean, no, it's supposed to do that.
Roll it up like a newspaper, put it in your coat pocket, walk down the road.
Exactly. That's what that's the only reason why I'll make it to 70, Sam. I need to see this stuff. Okay, this is the one that really got me. You probably noticed all my commentary. So I'm going to read both headlines first, and then I'm going to go back and do the summaries for each one. So headline number one, FBI says everyone should use encryption apps for their calls and texts after China hack. Encryption is your new friend is what they say. That's article number one. Article number two, FBI urges iPhone Android users to ditch WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, and Signal before it's too late. All right. So contradictory messages we have here. The summary for the first article. In response to a massive cyber attack allegedly linked to China, the FBI and the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, I pronounce it CISA. I don't know if that's it, but it's CISA, are urging the public to use end-to-end encryption apps like Signal and WhatsApp for calls and text messaging. The recommendation follows the breach of customer data for major telecom companies, including Verizon, AT&T, and Lumen Technologies, which I'm not familiar with, in an incident dubbed Salt Typhoon. I love that name, Salt Typhoon. End-to-end encryption ensures that only the sender and recipient can access the content of messages, making it a critical tool for secure communications. The FBI also advises using secure devices that receive timely software updates and enabling multi-factor authentication for additional protection. The attack highlights the vulnerability of stored text messages and call metadata, prompting calls for improved cybersecurity measures across all platforms. China, of course, has denied involvement in the breach, which reportedly compromised communications involving U.S. citizens, including political campaign members. The incident underscores the need for individuals to adopt encryption tools to safeguard personal and sensitive data. And as I pointed out over here, my family and I, we use Signal for our family chat because I'm the only one with an iPhone, and we all wanted a common platform to communicate on. And to be fair, when I had an Android, we also still used Signal. That's because they didn't want to use WhatsApp. I refused to use Facebook Messenger because at that time, Facebook Messenger was not end-to-end encrypted. I think it is now. Couldn't get anybody on Discord, and Discord's it's a little bit much for that. So we use Signal. Love Signal. I wish everybody was on Signal. That's not to say I don't like iMessage, but I actually prefer Signal over iMessage. Now, on to the second article. The FBI has raised concerns about popular encrypted messaging apps like WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, and Signal, cautioning that while these apps protect user privacy with end-to-end encryption, they also hinder law enforcement from accessing critical evidence in criminal investigations. The encryption ensures conversations remain private, but the security is exploited by criminals, including hackers and terrorist groups, to evade detection. The debate centers on the balance between privacy and public safety. Tech companies like Meta, Apple, and Google defend encryption as essential for user security, while authorities argue it creates warrant-proof barriers that undermine law enforcement's ability to prevent crimes. The FBI calls for responsible encryption. Responsible encryption that allows secure communication while enabling legal access to data when needed. However, critics, including digital rights groups, oppose such measures, warning they would weaken overall cybersecurity. This ongoing clash highlights the challenges of reconciling individual privacy with collective safety in the digital age, raising questions about how to address these competing priorities. So, in the middle of these two, I put in all caps, so which is it? Should we use it? Should we not use it? And I also pointed out that this reminded me of a Blue Bloods episode that dealt with this same issue. It was titled Common Enemies. It's season 9, episode 19, if you want to go see it. But in the storyline, Police Commissioner Frank Reagan confronts the challenges of data encryption when a tech company refuses to provide information on a criminal using their service, citing privacy concerns. Frank grapples with balancing public safety and individual privacy rights, highlighting the complexities law enforcement faces in the digital age. It originally aired April 12, 2019. It was a real good episode. So, which is it? What do y'all think? I mean, on the one hand, they're saying there was a hack. You should be using encryption applications for your communications. But oh, by the way, because we don't have any back doors, maybe you really shouldn't.
So, all right. So general rule, average citizen, use encryption. Use WhatsApp, Signal. I don't use any of that. But if you are conducting nefarious businesses, Silk Road, drug cartels, then those should be the responsible ones and use responsible encryption. Yeah. Step up your game, cartels. Use responsible encryption. And, you know, just like everything else, we just leave it up to the honor system.
Responsible encryption.
Isn't that what they called it?
That's what they called it. Yep. Yeah. Yep. So Ben's take is if you're a criminal enterprise, it is incumbent
your
upon
you. Civic duty.
It's your civic duty to use responsible encryption.
Mm-hmm. And just go ahead and wrap up the keys and send them to the FBI.
Well, before I ask Sam's take on this, another general question. How many of you text, because I know both of you have iPhones, how many of you text to Android devices?
Only the retarded family. No, pretty much everybody I communicate with has an iPhone, except for a few in-laws.
All right.
And in that group chat, it's green.
Yeah. Even though now it's using RCS, they've got an updated phone. What about you, Sam? How many people do you communicate with in texting? Not Discord, not some other, but in texting that have Android phones.
A lot of my communication is in apps, if I'm completely honest. That seems to be the thing that a lot of people want to do now. I've got like one work thing that's a group message, and one person in that is an Android user, but then the other person's an Apple user. So essentially one person out of my entire bunch.
What's your preferred texting app? Is it something like Signal, WhatsApp, or do you use something else?
It's more that it's the convenience of where people are than necessarily what the preference is. So, like, I've got a couple of people. This will be a weird mix, although kind of from the same place. So I've got a couple of people that are international that are on Instagram, for instance, of all places. Most everyone's on Messenger. Like, that's like the majority of people that are standard people, I guess, for lack of better terms. It's Messenger. Like, the main reason I still have a Facebook account is because everyone around me is on Messenger, and that's the only reason I can do it. So,
you know, Facebook Messenger is like the dog shit that I'm tracking into the house that I can't get off my foot. I can't stand it. But then again, I don't like Facebook either. And the only reason why I have a Facebook account is because of managing Tifton Talks and doing some stuff for clients. Otherwise, I wouldn't have Facebook, and I absolutely refuse to use Messenger. I just will not do it. The reason why I was asking about that, and not that any of us are trying to do anything nefarious, but if you're...
Sorry.
Except Ben, apparently. He's over there talking about responsible encryption, you cartels.
Has an entire guide.
I'm just setting the standards. I'm not conducting illegitimate business.
He's a consultant. He consults. He doesn't actually do the biz. Okay, we got that.
But if Papa Bricolini needs some IT support, let him know.
Exactly.
They're herbal supplements.
Texting between iPhone and Android is not encrypted, and not entirely sure when that will happen. I know they're trying to work toward it, but as far as I know, even with the latest update, I don't believe 18.2 did the encryption between RCS and iMessage. It's built to be able to do it. It's just that it's not there yet, as far as I can recall. But, and again, you know, unless you're the conspiracy-loving type that thinks that the federal government is probably snooping on your text messages and is going to haul your ass in for something that you didn't do or you said that was in jest, you probably don't have anything to worry about. You know the old adage, if you didn't do anything wrong, you ain't got nothing to worry about, right? So, I don't know. I prefer Signal. I do use iMessage. Ben and I were using Synology chat, but he abandoned me on that. So
it didn't auto start, and I've had some computer issues requiring a restart more than once a week. So it just never started.
You know
and
what?
I started today and I can't log in.
You know what? You might need an IT guy.
You know, if you know somebody who can come over and help me.
Okay. All right. I'll go through my Rolodex.
When Tyler comes in, you'll send him over.
Yeah, Tyler, go to Ben's house. He needs help.
Can you imagine, though, before we move on from this, I would love to have been a fly on the wall. This is like my headcanon for this particular story. So indulge me for a second, if you will.
Okay.
Can you imagine being a fly on the wall in that meeting that I'm imagining they had where different parts of the FBI were sitting there and going, well, we really need to advise them to do this. And then the other side's going, but we need back doors, you know that, to spy on everybody. So you can't just tell, well, no, but we really need the back door. And just the argument that just broke out between the FBI.
Yes.
I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in that meeting.
That would have been hilarious. And I could have envisioned them too. They're in the conference room and they're divided. It's all of them on one side that's like encryption. All of them on the other side are like, but back door.
Yes.
It's hilarious.
I can only imagine that was more than one meeting.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Matter of fact, they're probably still having meetings, I imagine. But don't you worry. Cash Patel is going to take care of all that. Moving on.
Wipe them out.
Sam's like, he just can't.
Why'd I have to pick this one? I
don't, can't get away. O2 unveils Daisy, the AI granny wasting scammers' time. O2 has introduced Daisy, an AI-powered granny, in quotes, designed to waste scammers' time by engaging them in lifelike conversations using advanced AI models and scam baiter training. Scam baiter training. I didn't know that was a thing. Daisy interacts with, say again?
I need to take that course.
Yeah, I know, right? Daisy interacts with fraudsters in real time, distracting them from targeting real people. The initiative is part of O2's broader Swerve the Scammers campaign, which addresses the UK's growing fraud problem. So O2 is a UK-based company from what I can remember and gather here. Daisy's ability to convincingly mimic human behavior has proven effective, keeping scammers on the phone for extended periods while exposing their tactics. The AI highlights the importance of consumer vigilance and encourages reporting suspicious calls and texts to help block fraudsters. O2 also calls for systemic reforms, urging the UK government to appoint a dedicated fraud minister. A dedicated fraud minister. That might be an interesting job. And establish a centralized body to tackle fraud comprehensively. The company continues to enhance its anti-fraud measures, including blocking millions of scam texts and calls monthly and providing resources to educate customers about identifying and avoiding scams. And so I think they have, I'm going to play this. Here's a video.
Seven in 10 Brits have been targeted by scammers. And it's not just our grandparents. I was one of them. But this film isn't about getting scammed. This is about getting even. Meet my friend, Daisy.
Hello, scammers. I'm your worst nightmare. I'm an AI created by O2 to waste phone scammers' time. So, W's then a dot.
Three times W and then dot.
I think your profession is bothering people, right?
I'm just trying to have a little chat.
It's nearly been an hour! For the love of...
Gosh, how time flies. It's showing me a picture of my cat, Fluffy.
It's showing you a picture of your cat, Fluffy.
Stop calling me dear, you stupid...
Got it, dear. Because while they're busy talking to me, they can't be scamming you. And let's face it, dear, I've got all the time in the world.
So whilst you're out enjoying life, Daisy and O2 are here fighting scammers, taking calls and wasting hundreds and hundreds of hours of scammers' time. If you want to help Daisy and O2 ruin a scammer's day, you can report scam numbers to 7726. Because you can't do it all on your own, can you, Daisy?
Who says I am, love?
Speak soon, scammers.
I love. It's like, my God, it's been an hour. You
keeping him on the phone for an hour. That is classic.
Yeah. Quit calling me dear, you blank. That is fantastic. I want more of that.
Mm.
And the fact that they did it as a very unassuming granny. That is like the chef's kiss right there. Mwah. Just awesome. So
infinitely patient.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can't compete with that. That's just
I love it. Oh yeah.
Plus, as an amateur voice actor, I'm finally glad that we are doing something good with the ability to just create a voice out of the blue instead of making people I know that do this as a profession nervous. So that's perfectly fine.
Oh,
turn
yeah.
it into a troll. Yeah. I'm perfectly happy with you trolling scammers with that technology.
Hey, I'll tell you that ability, I use 11 Labs for a lot of things now. Like if I need to record auto attendant greetings for customers, I'll write the script. I may use ChatGPT to rewrite it a little bit for me, or I may not, because I still feel like I'm a decent writer. And then I will record, because there's two ways in 11 Labs you can do this. It can actually do text to voice, or it can do voice to voice. And I have discovered that it's better if you use voice to voice than text to voice. So what I'll do is I'll record me saying the message, and then I'll either record it straight into their service, or I'll do a WAV file and then I'll upload it to it. And I use a particular female voice because, as studies have shown, auto attended and greetings and voicemails, people are more receptive to a female voice than they are a male voice. So I will do that. And the cool thing about it is, because I do it the way I do it with voice to voice, it picks up on that little bit of Southern twang that I have, because I am Southern. And so it sounds like a classy Southern woman actually recorded it. And I did a lot of that. I did a lot of that for the commercial stuff when I was running the radio station, the online radio station, Radio Tift. I stopped cutting my own stuff and I was like, wait a minute. And I would do variety. I'd do different. I would choose different voices. I pay $5 a month to use that service. And it has come in handy for being able to do these, you know, auto attendant greetings for, I did one for mine for like whenever I was basically on vacation for Thanksgiving. I'll do another one for when I'm basically shut down starting Friday and, you know, until January 6th. So I love that technology, but I also understand how it frightens those that make a living off of, you know, voice actors making a living off of that kind of stuff. So I get it. I don't ever want them to be replaced, but I love the fact that I now have a tool that I can probably create a granny.
I'll let Ben talk and then I've got a story to share. Let's put it that way.
I've got nothing to add to that. Oops. Go ahead.
Okay. So I got to work on a project. In fact, I was the only amateur in the room, which was hilarious to me. I was like, oh, well, what? But my friend Bill Minks is doing a project called Everly Heights. He's sort of building an entire world that is this, think Marvel Universe, but a comedy little tiny town, which also has dramas inside of it and stuff. So that sort of thing. But he's got all these amazing people come in and they're all professional voice actors and everything. And I've had talks with them and everything. And like, there was one guy that was legitimately sitting there on his couch and suddenly he heard his voice come out of the television.
Oh, no.
And he was like, I didn't record that, but that's my voice. Turns out they had stolen his voice, used this technology and effing yoinked his voice without paying him.
Oh, so, yeah, that is definitely a problem.
So, yeah, he had fun out of that one. I won't go into the full behind the scenes on that part of it, but there was some legal involved.
Yeah, from what I understand, you only need a few samples.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pretty good nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to remember if it's Bill Shatner, or if it's another legendary actor. There's one of them I remember, so if it's not him, I apologize to whoever it is, but in the last several months, I remember reading where they have some kind of legal binding contract with the studios and all that says essentially, even after they're dead, that the studios are prohibited from using their voice, their likeness, anything, AI, whatever, is absolutely, you're not going to do it. I was like, wow, okay, that's cool. So I'm fine with that. And you see all this stuff like OpenAI's, is it Sora?
Sora does the video.
Yeah, it does the video. Yeah. And now Google has just released theirs, which is basically kick the pants off of Sora. And I'm like, whoa, you know, and as we all keep saying, as the technology is today, that is the worst it will ever be. It's only going to get better, which does get me concerned about deep fakes and all of that. I mean, we already had a problem with deep fakes. It's just going to get worse. Okay, moving on from that desperation. Microsoft allows Windows 11 to be installed on older unsupported hardware, but specifically nixes official support. Minimum requirements for full compatibility remain unchanged. And one of the big things about that, before I read the summary, you gots to have a TPM 2.0, but there are ways around it. Microsoft now allows Windows 11 to be installed on unsupported hardware, though there are significant caveats. If I could actually read today, I'd be great. The company has reiterated that while users can bypass the operating system's minimum requirements like TPM 2.0 through tweaks, they will face potential instability, lack of official support, and absence of updates, including security patches. Additionally, a desktop watermark and notifications and settings will highlight hardware incompatibility. This move accommodates users on older systems, as Ben and I know all too well. Windows 10 approaches its end of life in October 2025. However, Microsoft warns against this approach, emphasizing the risks. A rollback to Windows 10 is possible within 10 days of upgrading, but ongoing support for Windows 10 will require an annual $30 fee. To ensure compatibility, users are encouraged to upgrade their hardware, install a TPM chip if possible, basically upgrade to a new machine, or explore alternatives like Linux. While the change offers flexibility, Microsoft actively discourages installations on unsupported devices. So, Sam, with your new PC, it came with Windows 11. Is this your first time really using it?
I have a laptop that uses 11, but considering the way I use that laptop, it's not like I went deep into everything that 11 can do, right? Because it's just a laptop. You know how that works. But yeah, so this is my first computer with 11 on it. So far, I've liked what I've been able to do with it, but I've only scratched the surface. Like, I've only had this thing for not even a week yet, right? So
I know Ben and I have talked about this in the past. There's some things I like about 11, especially I think we had a little tete-a-tete about this. The File Explorer having tabs. But
I know, yeah.
But the thing is, they could very easily put that in Windows 10. And personally, my point of view is this. I use Windows 11 on supported hardware. I've got it on my main machine. And I've got it on a laptop. They could have added all the stuff that they added in Windows 11 and just bolted it on the Windows 10 and kept going, because Windows 11, to me, is still not as stable as Windows 10. The File Explorer can get laggy. Sometimes it won't even just come up. And a lot of these, and I know if you go back to when Windows 10 really came out around 2015, 2016, people were bitching and complaining about moving away from Windows 7, because we don't talk about Windows 8. But, you know, and eventually once we got past all of what Windows 10, 15, 11, then 1602 or 04 or whatever, my God, mm-hmm. all the numbering sequences, it became a really good, I think after the 1700 and something, it became a really good stable operating system. And I, to this day, I still prefer it. So, and the it's arbitrary. Mm-hmm. I will fight you on this. I will die on this hill. The requirements that they made for Windows 11 were arbitrary. Anything that could run Windows 10 could run Windows 11. It might not run it well, but it will run it. There's absolutely no reason why a TPM 2.0 should be required. None.
I'm sure they have their reasons.
I know what their reasons are. Money. It's easy. It's easy. So I'll get off of that. This really doesn't have much. I don't think it affects any of us. I mean, even with me and Ben being in this industry, I don't think we're going out of our way to go, you know what? You don't really have to upgrade that. Let's see if we can get 11 on this with a few little hacks and tweaks. I was like, hell no, you're upgrading.
No, you're getting a new machine that has a warranty on it.
Exactly.
We don't do business like home.
Have any situations, let me ask you two as professionals, you don't have any situations, do you, where you have to use old software because something won't drag itself kicking and screaming along with new software, or do you? I'm curious.
The ones that use the software that I hate, they pay annually to use it. So if it doesn't work, the company will fix it for whatever. You know, whatever's wrong. So, and so far, we haven't had any problems on Windows 11. But but if not, we'll just find a new solution, because I'm not dragging dinosaurs around.
I do have one client, liquor store owner. His software originally was written for DOS. This one actually has a Windows shell around it. He runs it on, we go back and forth between two machines. One machine is Windows XP. The other machine is Windows Vista. Mm. He will not upgrade to. He said, I've looked at all the software. He said, this software does what I want it to do. It tracks my inventory. That's basically what it does. He puts all the stuff in. I mean, he's got a hand scanner. We even got him a wireless hand scanner so he can scan all the stuff into the system for his inventory. And the software was designed for liquor stores. He's like, I looked at that. He said, the replacement for this, if I remember what he told me, was like, $10,000 to $15,000 to replace this software. He said, I'm not doing it. It just doesn't make sense. And he said, I will keep using this software until these machines quit. And I don't believe it works on Windows 10. Tyler tinkered around with it a little bit. I can't remember, but I don't believe it'll work on Windows 10 and certainly not Windows 11. So he knows there's no support from the company. And he knows the only support that I provide is we literally back up his database onto a thumb drive, and then we shut that machine down and he powers up the other one and runs it for about a year. We just swap back and forth. The one thing I did do is I cloned his one of the system, or either both of them now. One or both of them have SSDs in them. Mm. So, you know, I gave him a little bit of a bump there, but beyond that, most everybody else, I'm right there with Ben. It's like, if this software upgrade requires Windows 11, then, and this machine won't run Windows 11, guess what? You're getting a new machine that runs Windows 11 because I can't do anything else.
Yeah. Listening to you guys enough, I kind of caught that vibe that that's kind of how things would go, but I was just curious. So,
yep. Okay. I don't know what Microsoft is doing. I hate this service. I will never use it, and I will go to whatever measures I have to make sure that it is not enabled. Microsoft Recall screenshots credit cards and social security numbers, even with the quote sensitive information filter enabled. So what we're talking about is Microsoft Recall, which is a feature designed to create a searchable timeline of a user's PC activity, recently returned to Windows Insider builds with promises of improved privacy and security. Despite enabling its sensitive information filter, which is supposed to block the recording of sensitive data like credit card numbers and social security numbers, tests revealed significant flaws. While Recall successfully avoided capturing data on some e-commerce sites, it failed in common scenarios such as capturing credit card details and personal data entered into a notepad file, recording social security numbers and personal data details in PDF forms filled out using Microsoft Edge, and saving sensitive data from custom web forms. So some of their key findings: inconsistent filtering. The filter only worked reliably on specific online payment pages, but failed in many other scenarios where sensitive information was displayed or entered. The privacy risk: despite encryption, the data is stored and could potentially be accessed by bad actors. Remote access via tools like TeamViewer bypasses biometric security. Weak points include PIN login vulnerability and limited restrictions against capturing sensitive inputs in less structured environments, such as Notepad. Encryption updates: Microsoft improved Recall by encrypting its database and screenshot files, which were previously stored as plain text. However, questions remain about the strength of this encryption. Under security measures, Recall requires Windows Hello biometric authentication for access, but the alternative four-digit PIN login undermined that security. The opt-in design: unlike the earlier opt-out version, users must now explicitly enable Recall. Oh, great. However, a prompt encouraging activation appears immediately after installation. So further concerns: Recall's broad purpose, capturing everything on the screen for easy recall, creates a heightened risk of exposing sensitive data. Users cannot fully trust the sensitive information, the filter, as it fails in everyday scenarios, leaving data like social security numbers, passwords, and credit card details vulnerable. And while Recall offers innovative functionality, its privacy risk and filtering gaps make it unsuitable for many users, especially those handling sensitive information regularly. Yeah, let's use this in banking scenarios. Microsoft acknowledges these shortcomings and plans to improve Recall's filtering capabilities over time. However, the extent of future enhancements and their ability to address all vulnerabilities remain uncertain. When they announced this, I think earlier this year, I thought this was the dumbest damn idea that Microsoft has ever come up with or has come up with in a long time. Thoughts?
As someone who's going to be working in a HIPAA situation in my future career, this is coming from my soundboard for people that can't see this. Just, I will just be swearing the entire time. Because no. Like, I can't imagine the nightmares that you guys are going to talk about that have been conjured inside of your heads in an IT side of things. But as someone who literally will be in a career where I'm dealing with people's sensitive mental health data, and there are entire ethics sections inside of my profession's ethics about keeping people's privacy, and then something like this goes, oh no, a computer will just do it. No. How about you just delete this dang thing? Don't put it on there because you've made my career way more complicated. Like, I could genuinely see like mental health professionals going, we got to use Mac now. Like, I could see it be that bad for a situation that it would cause an entire profession to move away from a platform because you couldn't trust it with the data that would be sensitive that even you would be processing, not even just from your client's side of things. Like, a lot of times in like the place that I work for now, they'll DocuSign things.
Yeah.
So they will send stuff to patients to fill out. That way it's all taken care of before you come in and stuff. Yep. That means that even if you on your end are doing things perfectly secure, well, on their end, Recall still got all the stuff on the documents. So, fantastic. Like, there are so many problems with this in my head from that lens that I'm looking through that have just, I don't like it. Not one bit.
You know, that actually, Ben, do you have any HIPAA compliant clients?
No,
Okay, I do. And that actually just scared the shit out of me, because as we're putting in new machines and upgrading, we're going with Windows 11. Their software will not run on anything except Windows. And now, oh yeah, I'm wondering at what point does this the company that does the software, are they going to have a fact that says something about making sure that this is disabled or what have you? Because Sam's right. That is a major problem. It had not occurred to me until we started talking about this, that as this actually becomes a feature in a released build of Windows 11, I do love the fact that it's now opt-in and not opt-out, because that would have been a pain in my ass to make sure that all new Windows 11 machines at this particular location had that disabled. Because Microsoft's got to know that that's not okay.
Somebody knows. But there's also BitLocker. I mean,
yeah, but BitLocker doesn't make copies of everything.
It just does data encryption. So if the machine's lost, then recall is not available to somebody who finds it at the dump.
I don't BitLocker anything. I hate BitLocker.
Yeah, I don't like it either, but
I mean, it's bit me in the ass too many times where, because of the way if I have a machine that goes down, and because of the plethora of software that has to be installed on these particular machines, it's better for me to just clone the drive if it's not the drive that went down. So I clone the drive and I put it in a whole new machine. You know, if the CPU, whatever, just the motherboard just dies, mm-hmm. or whatever, gets hit by a lightning strike, mouse goes in and pisses on it or something. I don't know. But the point being, when you have BitLocker, and if you don't have that key saved somewhere, you're SOL. That drive will not work. So that's the reason why I do not. And the thing that started aggravating me is I was getting these refurbs, and I finally caught on. They had BitLocker enabled by default, which, again, bit me in the butt one time, and I was like, holy shit. I had to completely reload the machine because there was no way I had access to that key. So I get what you're saying, but A, I don't use BitLocker, and there just seems to be, this is not HIPAA compliant to me. That's what, and I'm going to have to dig into it a little bit more.
Well, if I have any predictions for the future, we're going to have to start reading the ULA every time, because why else would you collect that data?
That's true. It's supposed to be a feature to help you go back and recover stuff. But anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but I can also see this being fed to an LLM to keep up with your own life. Can you imagine you just got a package from UPS and you're walking down the hall with it and you go, what the hell is this? And you hear a computer out of the next room going, what's the tracking number? You go, well, it's 1Z28564. That's the penis pump you ordered last week. And you go, oh.
Oh, no.
Could you have not said that just out loud and sent me a text?
Yeah, just ignore that, kids. That was for someone else, kids. So, yeah, I could see that happening.
Yeah.
Did I put that new user in? Yeah. Yeah, you did last Thursday at 2:46. You go, oh, cool. But yeah, that sounds like snippets of data that could be fed into a local large language model to help Copilot help you.
Yeah, because Copilot is so helpful. It really wants to be. You know, that actually reminds me, this is a little bit off topic, but the scenarios that you're bringing up. So, have y'all ever bought anything through a site that uses Shopify? I'm pretty sure you have.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you have the Shop app on your phone?
I do not.
Okay. I do. Now, the reason why I put it on my phone was so that I could track the purchases that I made through a Shopify store, whoever it happened to be. Over the course of the last 2 to 3 weeks, this app has started doing something that initially freaked me out. It is now alerting me to Amazon packages coming to my house that I haven't even ordered for me specifically. Case in point, it let me know that there was a package. It gives me the tracking number and it says, hey, you're getting a package via USPS for this tracking number. Okay. It was something that Tyler sent here before he got here, but it alerted me because it's tied to my address. Now, USPS does that. I'm fine with that because, well, they're the frickin' post office. I'm okay with that. But now the Shopify app is notifying me of packages that they don't have any damn connection to whatsoever. And I never told it to do it.
Yeah, it's probably a setting.
So, and I know that's not necessarily AI or anything like that, but it's just the, you know, when you think you're out, they pull you back in. I mean, so I've just been letting it roll, but it's, I'm going to have to go in and see if there is a setting because it gets a little annoying because it's actually popping up on my phone now going, hey, you got this package coming today. And I'm like, okay. And then about 2 hours later, it's like, hey, that package, it arrived. And I'm like, oh shit. I just went and got it out of the mailbox. Thank you.
I love the voice you've given this app. Keep going. No notes.
Yeah. He's a little sleazy. Anyway, yeah, I'm going to say it. Fuck you, Microsoft, and fuck recall. Moving on to our last story. Amazon is officially in the online car sales business. They have officially entered the online car sales market with the launch of Amazon Autos, an e-commerce platform that allows customers to search for, order, and purchase new vehicles directly from dealerships, starting with Hyundai in 48 U.S. cities, including major markets like Atlanta, Boston, and Los Angeles. The service enables users to browse by model, trim, color, and features, secure financing, and finalize paperwork online. Customers can also schedule vehicle pickups from participating dealers and trade in their old cars. Unlike competitors such as Auto Trader, Carvana, and CarMax, which primarily focus on used vehicles, Amazon Autos exclusively offers new cars. Amazon promises a no-haggling, transparent pricing model with checkout prices inclusive of taxes and fees, and the platform aims to expand to more cities, include additional automakers, and introduce leasing and enhanced financing options by 2025, which, by the way, is only 2 weeks away. Automakers like Hyundai may benefit from Amazon's extensive reach, while consumers may appreciate the simplified, transparent car buying experience. So I heard on another podcast this being made fun of you getting the notification that your vehicle, okay, maybe shop can notify you. Hey, that vehicle you ordered from Amazon Auto, it's on its way. So you get the notification that the car is on its way. Then you get the notification that the car has been delivered. You walk out and you pull a John Travolta, like from Pulp Fiction, walking around going, where's my car? So then you notify somebody. It's like, where's my car? Well, have you looked behind the bush? You know, the old trope of my package. It says it's delivered, but it's not here. Well, have you looked behind the shrubs? Do you have another place, maybe a table or something? My car's not under the fucking table, you know? So I got to give GOG credit for that one because I heard them talking about that. But I personally have never purchased an automobile online. Number one, I don't have that kind of money. Number two, okay, so they're going to be able to let you do the financing. That's cool. So you don't have to like whip out the black credit card and go, yeah, this thing's got an Elon Musk level of limit on it. So I guess that's cool, but I guess the question is this. Would either one of you legitimately buy a vehicle online, never having gone to the lot and test drive it?
No. Ben? Nope. I did buy one online without driving. I just drive it before I took delivery, but I bought one in Carvana, and I like to tell people I bought... I picked up my BMW at Walmart because I met the Carvana delivery at Walmart in Albany. Drove it, liked it, bought it.
Why don't you have it dropped off at your house?
Because that was an extra $500.
To drop it off at your house, but yet they drop it off in the Walmart parking lot.
Yeah, they brought it from Columbus.
That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, it didn't. They're like, yeah, we can. Yeah, it's $4.95 to bring it to your house. I was like, I'll just meet you in Albany. So yeah.
Sam, would you buy one online? Would you use something like Amazon Auto?
The thing is, I know that this used to be just a shop only thing. Apparently, thank you, Tom Merritt, for letting me know that one. And then it became a you can buy stuff, right? So if anything, I might use it to, you know, peek in and go, what's the stuff available? And then go to the dealership because that would save me a trip out. But now I'm going to the dealership and testing this thing out before I put my hands on it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's definitely. Now, if they had the same sort of option that like Ben had, where we'll bring you the car, you can test it out, then maybe I'd do that. But it's like, especially if I'm buying a brand new car, I want to test this thing before I'm spending that amount of money because I have never bought a brand new car. It's always been used. So
yeah, I'm not to that level where I can just go wake up one morning and go, you know what? I think I want a Maserati. Go online. Yep, that's the one. Have it delivered. And never put my ass in one, you know, or any of those expensive cars. No, that's not me. And unless I hit the frickin' lottery, it's never going to be me. Well, hell, even then, it's still not going to be me. I'm going to go test drive the damn thing, you know? I may insist that it get delivered to me after the fact because, you know, I'll be an arrogant asshole probably, but
You're like, pack it up, send it to me, and then you go on your airplane and come back home.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's the reason why the universe has not let me win the lottery yet, because it knows what'll happen.
I'm not allowed to dangle this under my helicopter, so you're just going to have to deliver this to my yard. Go full on Doctor Who, and you know what I mean by that, Donovan. Yep, so that
exactly. Now, what I would do is I would commandeer in whatever way that could be, and get one of those cargo helicopters that the military has, and pick it up and fly it over.
Drop it in like a James Bond moment. The sides of the carrier go boom, 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 boom on all the sides.
That's it. Then it automatically cranks up and drives off by itself. So, well, gentlemen, this is the end of our show. I actually kind of went light on the stories because I wasn't sure. I know the very first episode that we did, we had Tyler with us, and I thought, my God, this was going to be a 3-hour show. So I was like, well, maybe, because I actually added this Amazon story in this afternoon because I was like, that's something that we should talk about. So, yeah. All right, Sam.
Yes.
Where can people find you when you're not conversing with us, talking about tech stuff?
Well, you can find all my content, although at the moment we're currently on winter break, for lack of better terms. It was a combination of not having a computer able to do gaming content. And it's very difficult to have someone come over to the house because Jacob's currently doing Going Through Who with me. So since we don't do it remotely, because he has satellite internet, then he's one of my poor unfortunate souls, as a certain witch in a Disney movie would say.
Tell him to get Starlink.
I think he does have Starlink, actually. But anyway, regardless of all that, you can find me at tscn.tv for all of that stuff. I think the most recent thing I've done is an episode of Samuel's Thoughts where I covered putting together this new computer and setting it all up. And I talked about WWE's Saturday Night Main Event, bringing it back. And even though Jesse the Body Ventura came back for commentary, that's right, I got that one in me, Donovan.
Oh my God.
It may not have been as satisfactory to me as you might have thought. So that one's out there. And if you want to find me everywhere else, I will call it the one name so Donovan doesn't push me off of hill. Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitch at TSCN Sam.
That's right. You know what amazes me is I never would have pegged you for a wrestling fan all those years ago. And you actually caught me by surprise over the last couple of years where you've really, you know, had this passion for wrestling. And I was like, really?
Well, I've only been into it for a year at this point. Okay. Right? And I've come into the correct era for it. I have a feeling if I had gotten into some of the previous eras, it may not have grabbed me like it does, but they really do stories in this era. And I think that's what grabs me and stuff.
See, so, I was in it back during the Hulk Hogan and the Sting and all of those, the NC. Let's see, what was it? NCW? Was that it? No, the WCW.
WCW.
Then the WCW got bought by the WWE, or actually at the time it was the WWF, and then they got sued and had to change their name and all of that kind of stuff. And you know, my cousin Greg and I used to really, really enjoy it. My wife, not so much. She was like, you know, all of this is fake. And we're like, yes, we know.
Just like everything else on television.
It's like, yes, we know. It's scripted. It's a story. But so are soap operas. So, you know. So, yeah, but you never struck me as someone who would have been interested in wrestling. So that's...
Blame John Jagger over at the Frog Pants Network. He started his thing. I wanted to start my thing. I looked at the actual thing and then went, dang it.
Yeah, because you were doing the WWE wrestling games where basically it let the AI do its thing to actually do the matches, right?
Mm-hmm. And I've got one final episode of that to do before I'm going to take that and sunset it, because I'm running out of storylines in me. I'm not going to force this.
Oh, so yeah.
It's like, I'm going to do one big thing of everybody's here and then call it quits.
Am I still the champion?
Big Voice Jay took that from you, actually. But dang, you two are now a tag team that currently are the tag team champions. And you cockily call yourselves the champions. So,
of course we do, because that is what we are. We are all champions here. Ben, are you on Blue Sky yet?
No. Should I be?
Have you fallen down? Have you gotten back on Twitter and done any more arguments?
No, haven't been any more fights. But I did learn that there are drones over New Jersey.
Yes. There's actually drones now over North Georgia.
Okay.
Yeah.
But don't worry, it's ours. You're just not allowed to know what they're for.
There's nothing special about them.
They're mostly just airplanes and helicopters.
Well, I saw it today. I forget the number, but there are so many thousands of actual drones registered with the FAA. And they're basically like, and there was a change where the FAA started allowing the drones to be flown at night. And that's what people are seeing. It's like, well, we used to couldn't fly them at night. So everybody's like, hey, let's put them in the sky at night. And then people freak out going, oh, my God, it's aliens, you know. So, and I've literally seen that. I've seen elected officials go, it's either aliens, it's the Chinese, they're spreading COVID. I mean, come on. Just, but anyway.
Yeah, I got nothing. I saw a Star Wars prop on a trailer, or a picture of a Star Wars prop on a trailer. One of the starships.
X-Wing or something?
Yeah, one of those. Well, not the X-Wing, but the...
TIE Fighter?
Yeah, that sounds more
like the Millennium Falcon?
No.
Okay, so...
One of the small...
Yeah, that would have been a TIE Fighter.
One of the Empire machines.
Yeah, TIE Fighter.
Yeah. And so somebody had posted, you know, this drone crashed and is being carried to something. And I was like, that's not believable. And then I see in the trending, the news part of Twitter, that picture is there. And it's talking about drones over the New Jersey, and it's got that as a featured image. I was like, what? This is what we get.
Well, the problem is sometimes people do dang good parodies and the algorithm gets confused.
Yeah, like, but people are gullible. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. And then we have people shooting rifles at airplanes. Passenger airliners.
Yeah, because contrary to popular belief, it is illegal to shoot down a drone. Even if it is a personal drone, not a commercial drone, it is illegal to shoot down a drone because, as Ben just pointed out, it may not be a drone. Or if you're using a rifle, which you more than likely are, those bullets travel. And yeah. There have been, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there are horrible, horrible stories of suddenly somebody dies sitting in their house or sitting on their back porch because some moron shot, over, you know, maybe a mile away, shot up in the air. And the thing comes down and boink, right in the top of the head.
Yep.
So
we do not need to recreate the Mexican. You get points if you understand what the hell I'm talking about.
Is that what that movie was? I was recalling that scene.
Yeah, there they shoot the gun in the air and then yeah, the guy just
collapses because his bullet came back down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it happens. It does. Yeah, get on Blue Sky, dang it.
Why?
It's where all the cool kids are.
But I'm already paying for a zitter.
I didn't tell you. Made poor choices.
I made the choice not to see ads again and get access to Grok, which they later made free.
Yeah, but there are no ads on Blue Sky. They may eventually have some because they do have to, you know, make money, but there currently aren't any ads on Blue Sky. It's where all the cool kids are. Don't worry. It will be a steaming pile of shit in about 6 months, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's just like they all are.
Yeah, so... All right. With that said, if you have any questions or comments, you can email podcast@southgeeknews.com, or you can call and leave a voicemail or send a text. And that number is 229-234-1307. Again, that's 229-234-1307, or the email is podcast@southgeeknews.com. So have we decided New Year's Day? Because we can't do like we did last time where you were going to be traveling for Thanksgiving. We can't back it up a week because backing it up a week is Christmas Day.
Let's just say we'll do it on New Year's Day.
Okay, because Tyler will be here.
I may have to be remote, but...
That's fine. I mean, he and I can sit here in the studio, and I'll have to add you, send you another friend request because that Discord is up under a different name. It's up under the Tifton Media Works account, but yeah, because Tyler said, hey, I'm going to be there for 2 weeks if you're going to be recording a show while I'm there. I'm available. I'm like, cool. Okay. Cool. So what would be wild is we've got all four of us in there, but
I was going to say, I was about to say I could possibly do it. Then I went, oh, Tyler's there. Let's not risk making a 14-hour show, shall we?
Why not? Nobody will be drinking.
Well,
all right. Well, that's the end of the show. If you want bonus content, it is $5 per month. So just go to southgeeknews.com. We usually do an SGN After Dark, which is some of the stuff. It's usually when we're getting the show going, cut it out at the beginning, maybe cut some out at the end. You never know. That's the reason why you have to pay. Otherwise, you don't get it because I decided I'm never releasing it for free. So there, you know, why give it away? What is the old adage? Why pay for it when you can get the milk for free or something? Don't go there, kids. Forget I said that. That's actually a very sexist joke. I'm sorry. I apologize. All right. We're out. Bye, y'all. This has been a production of Tifton Media Works. Check out all our podcasts by visiting TiftonMediaWorks.com.